We've already talked about Clint Barton, and now the West Coast Avengers, dun dun dun, have a new leader in Kate Bishop. So this week's Geek History Lesson on Kate Bishop Hawkeye is now in session. Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson.
And I'm Jason the Quiverous Purple Inman. Welcome to your Mind University, because Geek History Lesson is the podcast where we take one character or idea from pop culture and then we teach you about it in about an hour. Sorry, I got on a little bit of a weird digital track there. Today we're going to teach you about Kate Bishop, whose name is Hawkeye. I'm a little confused by this because we already did a Hawkeye episode about this guy named Clint Barton. How are we doing another Hawkeye episode that's not about Alan Alda?
If you were a fan of our Mad About MASH podcast and you would like to hear an Alan Alda episode, please request it.
What are you talking about?
I have no idea.
There you go. Today we're talking about Kate Bishop, who, because she's about to jump into a brand new series called West Coast Avengers, dun dun dun, which is a long recurring joke on this podcast.
Was it our 200th episode? Did we do West Coast Avengers?
100th episode was the West Coast Avengers, but the joke had been,
yes,
been, we just kept running into the West Coast Avengers, and now we're running into another West Coast Avengers.
I actually want to say that it began with the original Hawkeye episode.
It might have. Yeah, sure.
I don't know. Someone tell us. Someone will know.
Yeah. But that's what we're talking about, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Did anybody request this episode?
Nobody requested this episode, sadly, but I will tease everyone. You definitely are going to want to stick around for our discussion portion of this episode, mm-hmm, because the one, the only, Kelly Thompson, who is writing the West Coast Avengers and wrote the Kate Bishop Hawkeye solo series, is joining us, actually returning guest from our Gem and the Holograms episode.
She's lovely. She's delightful. She's a great writer, and she actually writes West Coast Avengers. Dun, dun, dun.
So please stick around for the discussion portion of the episode.
God, I wonder if we can convince her to put that into canon.
Well, we should ask her.
We should ask her to put that in, like, just in one balloon. Like, somebody just sings it. Dun, dun, dun.
Man.
It would be amazing.
It would be amazing.
And then all us Mind University listeners, we would know that we affected comic books. That'd
be great. Oh my God, I would weep.
One of the characters we're talking about, we affected them.
Yeah. I'll send her an email. We'll see what she says.
Sure. Cool.
So why don't we dive right in? Let's get right into the 10 cent origin.
That's right. The 10 cent origin is the beginning section of this podcast where we teach you the Cliff Notes version of everything you need to know about this character in case you end up at a West Coast party and you're talking about the West Coast Avengers, specifically Kate Bishop.
Oh man, how cool would that be? Catherine Kate Bishop, fun fact, second character in a row named Kate that we're talking about on the show.
Oh, cool.
AKA Hawkeye, AKA Hawkette, AKA Lady Hawkeye, AKA Hawkeye Girl, is a Marvel Comics character created by Alan Heinberg and Jim Chung, who first appeared in Young Avengers number 1 in April of 2005.
Sorry to interrupt you. Okay, I just want to throw this in everybody's head. Alan Heinberg did start out Young Avengers, wrote the Wonder Woman movie.
That everyone loves. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just
also,
throw that out there.
Just a humble brag, Jim Chung, friend of Ashley and Jason, which is very cool.
Well, I wasn't going to go that far.
I was.
No.
her first appearance was in Young Avengers number 1, April 2005, and her team affiliations have been with Hawkeye Clint Barton, Young Avengers, West Coast Avengers. She's got pretty limited teams. She was also a member of the grown-up Avengers, but only very briefly, and we will talk about
that. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. Her abilities include being a highly skilled archer, a highly skilled swordswoman, a martial artist, a boxer, and having a bunch of cool trick arrows. And there's your 10 cent origin on Kate Bishop.
Woot woot!
Why don't we roll right into the meet cute?
The meet cute is a term that we stole from romantic comedies where we talk about where we first met and cuted and fell in love with these characters. Ashley, I mean, this one might be the same story, but let's find out.
I think it is going to be...
Where'd you first meet Kate Bishop?
Young Avengers.
The original series.
Yes.
Yes. Because there's been a couple titles now called Young Avengers. So
yes. The better...
You have to clarify it.
The better series, IMHO.
Yeah, the original one.
Yeah, the original one that I borrowed from you.
Yes, that's true.
So that's it. I'm assuming it's the same for you.
Yes, it is. No, it was a dark street corner. Deep. Deep. In the Panorama Valley. Next.
The Panorama Valley.
Yeah.
It's a very specific reference.
On the West Coast.
Yeah.
Where the West Coast Avengers exist. Mm-hmm. No, it was Young Avengers. I actually, to be honest with you, I'm going to say this right now. I'm surprised that Kate Bishop Hawkeye has lasted this long, because she is kind of a redundant character, especially since they've never renamed her. She's just always been Hawkeye.
I'm going to say, though, I sort of love that about her.
Okay.
I love that she took on this mantle.
I mean, I like her as a character. I'm just saying, like, I'm very surprised they haven't killed her off.
I think you're right. But I think that's kind of what's fascinating about her. And I do think that by the time we get to a post-Fraction Hawkeye era, I definitely think she transcends being a supporting character.
Cool.
Okay, but before we head into the main meat of the lesson, which is, of course, coming right up, let's talk about one of our sponsors. Jason, who is one of our sponsors this week?
One of our sponsors for this week is the amazing Leesa. That's spelled L-E-E-S-A. And not only do they spell their name in a really cool way, but they also provide you with a quality night's sleep that helps you recover from distractions faster, prevents burnout, and helps you make some better decisions. And one of the best decisions you could ever make is getting a Leesa mattress. Now, I have a Leesa mattress. They sent me an awesome memory foam Leesa mattress, and I gotta say, it is probably my favorite mattress of all time. I'm not lying about that. I'm not just saying that because they sponsor our episode, and I'm not just saying that because the sleeps that I get on a Leesa mattress help me provide for this and do more research and be more awake for comic book reading time to make this podcast better. But I'm saying it because, you know, it's actually a really good mattress.
Yeah.
And I love it because Leesa's mission is to provide a better night's sleep for everybody through their 1 to 10 program. They donate one mattress for every 10 they sell. That's more than 26,000 mattresses and counting. So they donate their mattresses, not just to podcast hosts like me, but to people that need it and people that deserve it. So Leesa has a pretty awesome summer deal. You can get $130 off a Leesa mattress at leesa.com/geek. History. That's leesa.com/geek history. And if you see a promo code or a promo area, just throw geek history in there. Throw it in there twice. Throw it in there three more times to make sure you get all those discounts over at Leesa Mattress. We thank Leesa Mattress for sponsoring this podcast. And, you know, we just want you to know about it.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right, Jason, where do we go to next?
History 101, the main meat of the lesson, yes.
Right, so let's dive into Kate Bishop. She is a socialite, which means that she's rich. Her parents, Derek and Eleanor Bishop, had their first child, Susan, and then a younger daughter, Kate. They were both born and raised in Manhattan. Shocking for a Marvel Comics character. Oh,
dear
I
Lord.
Know.
Yeah, Marvel character that grew up in New York City.
Can you imagine?
New York City.
Derek Bishop was an emotionally distant father, but Kate admired him.
Aren't they all? No, I'm joking.
Not mine. and always worked hard to get her father to notice her as much as he notices the changes in his business. However, Kate was soon sent away to boarding school so that she was never with her parents often. She does eventually fall out of love with her father when she catches him beating someone up in his office late at night. You
Whoa.
Know,
all right.
Like Jen.
Is he a bad guy?
He's kind of a bad guy.
Is he like a crook?
Yes. He's not okay. Like he's not like a villain, but I think a crook is a good way to describe him. Her parents do become estranged and are very hands-off types until her mother dies while on vacation in Boulder, Colorado, when Kate is a young child. Following this, Kate's interest started to pivot in the direction of helping others and more selfless charitable acts. This began a separation between Kate and her sister Susan, because Susan can't understand why Kate cared so much about other people when they could just spend their money. You know, like sisters do. I don't have a sister. I have no idea what sisters are like. Mm-hmm. With friendly but distant relationships with all of her family members, Kate learned to become very self-sufficient and self-reliant from an early age, which is kind of a common superhero vigilante type trope. Since the incident where she caught her father beating up a dude, Kate had kept an eye on him, and this led her to following him to a meetup with El Matador. Have you ever heard of El Matador?
I think I have.
He's a totally minor, I never heard of before meeting Kate Bishop, Marvel Comics villain, who dresses up like a matador mm-hmm. and likes to fling his capes around and blind people. And she winds up getting caught by the villain after her father left and she didn't sneak out fast enough. So El Matador decided that the best thing to do was to hold Kate captive and use her to demand a ransom from her father. Fun fact, she is rescued by the Avengers.
Oh, really?
Because I guess they weren't doing anything else that night. And the rescue effort is actually led by Clint Barton Hawkeye. There's a really cool panel where Kate is all tied up and then an arrow swings, but like flies past mm-hmm. her face. And Kate winds up being so impressed with Hawkeye and that he was an Avenger with no power, and that he could and that he could stand up next to like Thor and Iron Man, that she kind of replaced him as her role model in place of her father.
Oh, cool.
Now, if you know anything about Clint Barton, this is slightly hilarious because he's a wildly irresponsible type.
Yes.
I don't know if he's maybe the best role model that you could have.
No, not really.
But definitely better than a dad who beats people up in the shadows at night. Am I right? Kate also felt uncomfortable with her family's wealth and began trying to emulate her mother. Her mother was one of those socialite types who would throw balls and donate to charity auctions and
kind
stuff
of
like
classic
that.
Comic trope socialite type.
Yeah, so a socialite with a healthy dose of guilt.
Like a Bruce Wayne-ish type.
Yeah, but Kate actually started working at like soup kitchens and women's shelters. She actually showed up and put her time.
She actually cared.
And her money where her mouth
was.
Good
for Kate. Yeah, good Kate, for you, Kate.
Kate's kind of an amazing young woman. Hey.
No, I just wanted to like think about that Ryan, that meme with the actor from La La Land.
Oh, the lesser Ryan, the one with the lazy eye.
Yeah,
Ryan,
it's like, hey, girl.
Gosling?
Yeah, Ryan Gosling. Hey, girl. Hey, Kate. Good job. I don't know where I was going with that. I just thought of that. Sorry.
There's a funny meme where he's wearing a sweater and it says, want to feel my sweater? It's made of boyfriend material.
Oh, good God.
Yeah, I thought that was good.
It's pretty good and has nothing to do with Kate Bishop, but I love it. All right, cool.
Another real turning point came when Kate was sexually assaulted while walking in Central Park just prior to her sister's wedding.
What?
Yeah, it turns out if you're a female in the Marvel Universe, you're probably going to get sexually assaulted.
I did not know about this.
Yeah, it's... I will say it's ambiguous in the fact that you never really learn exactly what happens. And after her initial introduction, it's not referred to. Kate actually goes on to live a very active sex life, which I think is great. But you never really know exactly the extent of what happened, just that something happened. And this attack leads her to begin training in martial arts and self-defense, which is probably one of the healthier ways that you could channel your rage given
sure.
these situations.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fun fact, she also attended therapy during this time, which isn't something that you usually see superheroes doing. So I really appreciate that that was something that was woven into the narrative. I don't know if it's supposed to feed that stereotype of like a New York socialite doing talk therapy and being really neurotic. but either way, I just wanted to mention that. And I think it was a really interesting story point.
Sure.
Her sister's wedding, of course, goes on, even though Kate's been attacked, only to then be attacked by a half-baked version of the Young Avengers. So they get attacked by aliens. Like half of the Young Avengers team show up to save the day. They do a really bad job and kind of bungle it. And Kate winds up working with them and taking a bunch of Patriots throwing stars in order to go on the offensive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So after that, she goes to the hospital to be treated for the assault and for what happened when her sister's wedding was attacked. And Cassie Lang, who is the daughter of Scott Lang, the second and best Ant-Man, who is a superhero in her own right, known as Stature. She can
yes.
grow and shrink. She catches up with Kate in the hospital, and they decide that they're going to team up to track down the Young Avengers who've gone back into hiding. They are operating at the time out of an old abandoned version of an Avengers Tower, Avengers Mansion.
Mm-hmm.
So they go...
Which is the original... it's actually the original... Avengers hideout or hangout or whatever, you know.
Yeah, a base of opera, however you want to think about
mm-hmm.
it. So Cassie and Kate have identified themselves to each other and they're going to team up. So they break into the Young Avengers mansion, we'll call it, I guess.
It is the mansion.
Where they have a brief fight with everyone and are promptly invited to join the team because
oh,
there's
cool.
no girls on the team.
Yep.
And Billy was like, well,
yeah, it's four boys.
Kate makes a costume for herself out of a bunch of stuff that belonged to other heroes, which I actually think is really cool. She uses Mockingbird's battle staves and mask, Swordsman's sword, Black Widow's belt, and Hawkeye's bow to complete her first mission and her first costume.
And I think she just grabbed it from it was laying around the mansion.
Which is weird
that, like, at this time in the Marvel Universe, the mansion was blown open because of Avengers Disassembled.
Mm-hmm. And a bunch of them are actually Skrulls.
And the Avengers just left that there?
Yeah, it's a little irresponsible.
Because their mansion's near Central Park. Come on now.
It's in Central Park, I believe, or it borders Central Park.
It borders Central Park, I think.
I think actually this is a wildly irresponsible move on Jarvis's behalf, that he just left all of these valuable resources.
Yeah, Jarvis. All right, we got to talk. We got to talk, Jarvis. We got to talk.
But I think it's cool because I like that Kate makes herself over. Her first costume is an homage, and then she eventually gets to a point where she grows beyond that and kind of forms an identity of her own. So Kate and Cassie are made permanent members of the team after the Young Avengers are attacked by Kang the Conqueror, because they were only kind of like adjunct members.
Yep.
And they were instrumental in taking him down. A time-traveling younger version of Kane had been leading the Young Avengers as Iron Lad at the time. And with the defeat of his evil future self, the team was left without a clear leader.
Well, because they defeated Kang and then Iron Lad disappeared from existence.
Right. And he had been sort of...
Back to the Future style.
Yeah. Which there's a whole discussion about whether he should leave or not, what's good for the timeline. Request an Iron Lad, a Kang episode, if you want to hear more about
that.
No,
it should be a Kang. Yeah, yeah. There's not enough on Iron Lad.
Unfortunately. I like him as Iron Lad, though. I think Iron Lad's a cool character.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a cool design.
However, the grown-up Avengers, although mostly Captain America and Iron Man, didn't like the idea of the Young Avengers. And when the Young Avengers showed up and they asked for training, Iron Man ordered them to disband. He was like, screw you kids. Go home. Iron Man's kind of a jerk to the Young Avengers.
This is the time period in the Marvel Universe when Iron Man is a jerk.
Yeah.
Because this is almost, we're almost to Civil War.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're rushing right up against Civil War.
Yeah, and this is Iron Man very much being like, I don't like superheroes.
Luckily, though, Kate is independently wealthy on a vast allowance from her parents.
Just like Tony Stark.
Imagine that. You always need an independently wealthy person on your super
team. It's basically
team.
The basic superpower of superheroes.
Of white superheroes, certainly.
There you go, yes.
And so she was able to fund a new base of operations for the Young Avengers. They had been, like I said previously, working out of an abandoned Avengers mansion, and she's able to procure weapons, a new costumes for everyone. So thanks, Kate.
Money.
In light of this, Kate and Patriot. If you don't know who Patriot is, really quick, Jason, who's Patriot?
I don't remember his name.
Eli.
He is the son of technically the original Captain America, one of the original testes or test subjects of the Super Soldier Serum, mm-hmm. who debuted in Truth, that is his grandfather, and through basically genetics, mm-hmm. Eli has one quarter of the Super Soldier Serum in his blood.
Yeah, he and he kind of wears a version of the Star Spangled Kids uniform,
and almost Bucky. It's part Bucky's outfit too.
Very Bucky. Mm-hmm. So Kate and Patriot, aka Eli, take up leadership roles and a romantic connection. I really like them romantically together. I'm just putting that out there.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
Kate has a lot
of
crappy boyfriends. Eli's one of the better boyfriends. Although friction does develop between them when Kate learns that Eli is taking human growth hormone to stimulate and strengthen the super soldier serum that he already has in his body. And this leads to Eli getting injured, and then Kate turns around and blames Captain America for refusing to train them properly and refusing to take Eli under his wing. Because other than his grandfather, who's quite old and has some injuries from his time in the service, Cap is the only person who really understands what Eli's going through and his struggles.
Yep.
And he's not super into helping them out, and that's a bummer. Immediately following this, Jessica Jones shows up and presents Kate with Hawkeye's original bow and a handwritten note from Captain America where he addresses her as Hawkeye for the first time, thus cementing her new code name.
If you do not know the answer to this, it's okay. Uh-huh. I thought she got the bow from the mansion.
She steals a Hawkeye bow from the mansion.
But not the original
bow.
No,
and then later, kind of as an apology, Jessica brings her, because Jessica's a little bit of a mentor.
Well, Hawkeye's dead at this time.
He is dead. Yeah. But so she gives her Hawkeye's original bow.
Cool. All right, cool.
Sort of as a gift from, this sort of symbolic gift from
Captain
America.
Yeah, and I assume like Hawkeye, like many characters that are based around weapons, would have several bows.
He does. In fact, he's going to give Kate one in another story.
He's
going to
give her another bow.
Later on, Kate actually goes through about 10 bows, I think, over the course of this lesson.
You'd probably break them left and right.
Or Wolverine breaks them for you. For the next little while, she's just going to keep popping up in big events in a small capacity. So strap in for an onslaught of Marvel Comics events. Thanks, editorial. Civil War happens next. Jason, really quick, what is Civil War?
Civil War is a Marvel Cinematic Universe movie where Spider-Man shows up.
False.
Hmm? That's, I False. Mean, that is. I mean, what, you want the comic event Civil War?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I'm
about
sorry.
That.
I'll be more clear next.
Yes, please, please. Marvel Comics Civil War event is where Stamford, Connecticut blows up. The government says superheroes should have licenses, like driving. Iron Man says yes. Captain America says no. They punch each other a lot. Captain America eventually gets shot.
Yeah.
That's it.
Also,
and Iron Man becomes the head of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Also, by this time, Clint Barton is back alive, just so you know.
Through, yeah, Scarlet Witch magic-y.
Yeah, don't worry about it too much. And we are going to go back to the Young Avengers story, so we're hopping around a little bit in continuity. But so Clint Barton joins Captain America's team, and this is where Clint and Kate first meet. Kate is wildly unimpressed because Clint at the time had put on Captain America's outfit and his shield and was sort of masquerading around pretending to be him slash helping him. And she doesn't think that this is a good use of Clint's time. She thinks he should just be Hawkeye. And she tells him that she doesn't think the Hawkeye name is a joke and she doesn't like that he's treating it that way. And this is kind of the first inkling that even though Kate's about 16 here, she's way more mature than however old Hawkeye is, because Clint Barton is wildly immature. The next time they meet up, Clint, who is disguised as Ronin slash wearing his Ronin costume, attacks Kate in Central Park after a date with Eli as a test of her strength and skill. Then he proceeds to kind of stalk her a couple more times and test her. But he eventually offers her some really sweet words of encouragement and allows her to continue using the name Hawkeye. He also gives her permission to keep using his bow. So she's allowed to keep his bow, and he's going to go off and sort of, based on what she had said to him during Civil War, redefine himself. Kate and the rest of the Young Avengers then briefly appear in Secret Invasion. That's the one where all the Skrulls come back.
Yep.
And they join forces with the Runaways. They can be seen in the art on the forefront of the battle and the front line with the Skrulls, even though they have a very small role narratively. But if you've ever read that, they show up in there. Then Siege happens. Jason, what's Siege?
Norman Osborn, who's now weirdly the head of S.H.I.E.L.D., says, "Hey, Asgard, you floating above Oklahoma? Not anymore." And he bombs it.
Yeah.
That's it. But it basically leads to the fall of Norman Osborn and the Avengers getting back together.
Yeah. So Kate is leading the Young Avengers along with Eli. They go to Asgard.
To Asgard!
That was so loud. It has fallen, and they are participating in the efforts to rescue it. Kate gets trapped under a bunch of wayward rubble along with Eli Patriot. They have a big fight underneath all the rubble about who should be in charge and their respective leadership styles, what led them into the situation in the first place, how did we get here, this kind of thing. But because they're teenagers, it definitely culminates in them making out. Then the comic goddesses open up the skies and smile on readers everywhere, and we get the Young Avengers team book called Children's Crusade. A lot of this stuff was happening concurrently, so I wanted to rush through the events.
Yeah,
and now we're going to talk about
Children's Crusade actually kind of happens pre-Civil War.
It was
like
published pre-Civil War.
It was published after Civil War, I think. It didn't come out until years later. I think in continuity.
But the timelines are all kind of messy, so I do apologize.
I think it actually takes place continuity-wise before Civil War. I could be wrong about that.
Just strap in, though. It'll be okay. Children's Crusade is much more interesting than Civil War.
Yeah.
It doesn't actually have a lot to do with Kate, so we're going to go over it in the broadest strokes and really focus on the points that she's involved in. If you do want to hear more about it, request the Young Avengers, Wiccan, Hulkling, or Stature episode, because they're kind of more the point of focus.
Yep.
So the Young Avengers travel through time with Scarlet Witch and Iron Lad in an effort to help Wiccan get his powers back under control, because they're kind of fritzing and they don't quite know what's going on. When they return to the future and free themselves from the time stream, fun fact, I wrote time stake, Scarlet Witch's powers go super haywire and her powers are temporarily transferred partially to Doctor Doom, who uses them to kill Cassie Lang, and then Iron Lad kills Kid Vision, and everyone gets really, really sad.
Hmm.
In the wake of this, the Young Avengers are disbanded until the remaining members, Kate, Billy, Teddy, and Tommy, are called by Miss Marvel. This is Carol Danvers, Miss Marvel, to Avengers Tower, where they are inducted as full-time members of the grown-up Avengers. Yay! For like 5 whole seconds, because then you know what happens, Jason?
I have no idea.
Marvel Now happens.
Ah.
Marvel Now being the soft reboot that we got in 2013. And the next time Kate Bishop crops up in any capacity is in the Matt Fraction, David Aja Hawkeye series that I would definitely argue is her most defining thing. Clint Barton, who you may remember as being the original Hawkeye, moves to Brooklyn and he wants to focus his efforts as a vigilante on that neighborhood, on more street level things, on how he can help the little guy, because we have Thor, we have Iron Man to worry about the big guy. So he wants to help the little guy. So he invites Kate to be his partner, once realizing that he does need some help. He can't just do it on his own with Lucky by his side. Lucky's his dog. They do awesome things together, like fight gangsters who wear velour tracksuits, take down creepy circus performers.
Yeah, bro.
I love them so much. They buy the tenement that Clint is living in so that he can abolish their rent and look after them, the people living there, to the best of his ability. Their first big bad is Madame Mask, who kidnaps Clint and brings him to Madripoor. Jason, what's Madripoor?
It's just a place in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, it's a fake Asian island.
Yeah.
Kate saves him by disguising herself as him, and together they steal a tape that Madame Mask had that framed Clint for killing Duke Fang, who's like a Russian gang, an Asian gangster.
I have no idea who that is, but sure.
He only exists in this run.
Cool.
He doesn't exist anywhere else. The tape is fake. S.H.I.E.L.D. was trying to get it because they weren't sure if it was fake or not. They steal it. Kate doesn't know whether or not it's true. And Clint tells her that it's a frame job and she believes him, because that's the real show of trust from her for the first time in the series. What's interesting to me about this version of Kate is that she's vastly more mature than Clint, and she's more mature here than the version that we saw in Young Avengers. She's one of the better, more level-headed Young Avengers, I think. But here, and she's sort of ambiguously older, you get to see more of what an adult Kate might be like, as opposed to what a 16-year-old Kate is like. And she often acts as the voice of reason. In the Valentine's Day special, she listens to Clint's problems with all of his exes. He even hints that he might have feelings for her, although it's unclear whether or not he ever follows through on that.
And that's weird.
You think so? You don't think their relationship...
That Kate and Clint should be together?
Mm-hmm.
It's very weird.
Even if she was a little bit older?
She's
21.
I mean, she's not. I mean, Clinton is at least 35.
I think Clint's got to be in his 40s.
I mean, Clint at 35, even at these youngest 35, at 20, with a 20-year-old, yeah, it's kind of weird. I'm sorry.
I would agree with that. I just thought
weird.
It would be an interesting question. When Clint wants to give up being Hawkeye, Kate returns his original bow to him and tells him not to give up when he can do so much good. So she's doing a pretty good job being his cheerleader. She doesn't get into a ton of trouble in the Marvel Now Young Avengers series until... she has a one-night stand with Novar, a.k.a. Marvel Boy. Can I tell you a secret? I think Marvel Boy's a real jerk.
He is a real jerk. That's the whole point of his character. He's a Grant Morrison character, though.
So they have a one-night stand, and he basically kidnaps Kate and takes her into space, where they mm-hmm. probably get attacked by a bunch of Skrulls.
That happens in Young Avengers, right? The future Young Avengers run?
Yeah, this is the Young Avengers, the Gil and McKelvey run. So they're forced to work together in order to try and get back to Earth.
Yes.
She sends text messages to her GBF Billy from space and is surprised when he doesn't text her back right away, even though she's in space, which I find slightly hilarious.
How did she get cell reception?
I don't know, but she's texting Billy and Billy doesn't text her back. So this immediately lets her know that something is absolutely wrong.
Okay.
Because even in space, Billy would text her back. I think we have
in space, no one can hear you text.
I think we have to assume because they're Young Avengers, because
the aliens
because
fans
Billy
are loving that.
Is because Billy is a magical being, yeah. That they might have some kind of advanced tech or magic that allows them to communicate.
You know, Wi-Fi in space, man, that's boring.
Yeah, you gotta sort of suspend your disbelief. So she cobbles together a bunch of Skrull tech and is able to track down Billy's phone using the same cell reception towers that they used in Serial. He is being held along with Teddy, Teen Loki, and America Chavez by a mysterious foe. Now, Jason, I don't know if you know who the mysterious foe is, but that's kind of their official name. They're a shape-shifting alien that in this arc was disguised as Mrs. Altman, a.k.a. Teddy's human mom, that's Hulkling's mom. And more of their species show up disguised as more of the Young Avengers parents. And Kate discovers a Kree composite soul bow on Novar's ship. and they use that in order to escape and destroy the evil parents. Have you ever heard of the Kree composite soul bow?
Nope.
So I hadn't either, so I looked it up because it sounds really impressive. And according to the internet, the Kree composite soul bow is an old-fashioned weapon of Kree origin. Stylistically, it shares the same design sensibility as the Nega bands and similarly utilizes the energies of the negative zone and the wielder's own psionic energies as a power source. So it's basically a fancy old-timey bow and arrow that uses negative zone energy to kill bad guys. Really convenient. In a Hawkeye story that she gets a magical bow and arrow to fight aliens. Their shapeshifting parents are defeated, and this new group declares themselves officially as the new incarnation of the Young Avengers for the Marvel Now continuity. They then spend a lot of time chasing Speed through the multiverse, and Kate mostly doesn't like adventuring in this cosmic scale. Kate and Novar start dating during this time as well. Which I don't like.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
I don't like Novar.
I like Novar.
I don't think he's good for Kate. I like him in his solo series. I don't like him as a member of the Young Avengers. I will say that. Evil Mother Shapeshifter does show up again toward the end of the series with an army of evil Young Avengers, so basically alternate versions of themselves for them to fight. And it is during this big fight that Novar admits that, I mean, he really likes Kate, but he also tells her that if he had the opportunity to get back with his ex-girlfriend, Oubliette, that he would definitely take it.
Mm-hmm.
And basically crushes her heart. I also think it's funny because I think Oubliette is supposed to be a take on the word oublier, which is the French verb to forget. And Novar obviously can't forget her. So I guess I sort of enjoy that from like a meta-narrative perspective. Kate gets pretty mad about this, as you might imagine, but then during the after party, which is once they've defeated all these aliens, they come back to Earth, and on New Year's Eve, they throw themselves an after party. They do officially break up. Kate takes the opportunity to dance with Tommy, and she kisses him at midnight, which is just another in Kate's litany of bad choices. One of the criticisms that I would lob at this particular version of the Young Avengers is that Kate kind of... I guess gets around, and they often use her sexuality as an excuse for her to make a mistake and then to start out a new conflict for the team. I don't think that's fair to level on a female character. I think you could just as easily have had a male character do it.
Yeah.
And the fact that this happens to Kate three times in a row, I think is a little mean. And I think Kate's better than that. So I just wanted to point that out. She's also in New York City when Hurricane Sandy hit. This was a big deal. The Hawkeye series did an entire issue dedicated to the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy. But Kate decides to stay in order to protect herself and the other people that are attending the same engagement party as her. It's a really, really spectacular issue. Kate helps an elderly woman find important medicine that she needs and doesn't have easy access to, and she stops a robbery at the same time. And I think it's always really special when comics can take on real-world events like this, and you can see that trying to do your best and trying to stay positive is the best solution to anything. This is a solo issue. There are other bigger issues. Love is Love is obviously a much bigger answer to a real world problem, but I think that that's a really special moment. And even though it doesn't affect the larger continuity, I did want to mention it.
Yeah.
Back in the main Hawkeye title, an assassin is sent after Clint because everyone wants to kill him in that series, and winds up killing their friend Grills instead. Grills is one of the other people who lives in the building with them.
Yeah.
While attending his funeral, Kate tries to tell Clint how much he means to her while they're in the car leaving, but it's revealed that he has been sleeping in the car throughout her little speech, and she never risks telling him this again because she feels betrayed that he wasn't listening to her. Clint continues a bad downward spiral, and when Kate tries to help him, he turns her down and turns away from her. He tells her to leave him alone. So she grows increasingly frustrated with his childish behavior. I mean, he's a grown man. We just talked about how old he is. So she eventually decides to move from New York City to Los Angeles, and she takes Pizza Dog with her. Once she arrives, she sets up a Heroes for Hire business since her father is no longer giving her an allowance to live on. You got to make money somehow. You got bills to pay. Madam Mask, who was the original villain that she faced with Clint, shows up again trying to take down Kate's new friend, Harold H. Harold, who has burned down one of the buildings that she's operating out of in L.A. Jason, I want to ask you really quick. Marvel is so heavily steeped in the mythology of New York City. What did you think, or what do you think about moving some of these major characters to the West Coast? Hawkeye's gone. Punisher's gone to the West Coast.
They haven't all stayed there, though.
They rarely stay there, yeah.
I think it's a good idea. I think the West Coast Avengers, I think there should be a West Coast Avengers. I also think that West Coast Avengers is just a great sounding name.
Mm-hmm.
It should happen. To me, it's one of the things that irks me about the Marvel Universe. I love the Marvel Universe, but I hate that every hero is based in New York. I hate it.
Yeah.
It's dumb. I honestly think it's really dumb.
Do you think a superhero universe, do you prefer where DC just makes up fake cities?
Yes, I do. I prefer the fake cities because, one, we all know what real cities they represent.
Uh-huh.
But two, it also really kind of lets the creator, whoever the writer, determine whether they want it to connect to the Marvel Universe or not. They can decide. You can just be like, you know, if say Hawkman is in St. Rock, mm-hmm. you know, this own city, and in his own solo series, he's only in St. Rock. You never meet any other characters. But then if in another series, say Green Lantern goes to St. Rock and he sees Hawkman, that's cool. Like, he connects the rest of the universe. But say in his own solo series, he only stays in Rock, then that's fine. And it kind of makes it like its own bubble. The sad thing about all the Marvel superheroes existing in New York kind of makes it seem like it's ridiculous when they don't run into each other all the time.
Yeah, that they're not all showing up to fight the same three bad guys.
Yeah, like if any Spider-Man villain shows up, then I feel like 95 superheroes would show up to fight that one guy.
And they would just be spider characters. Forget about everyone else.
Exactly. I don't know. I think it is a good idea. I think Marvel should have presence in other cities.
Cool. When Kate is investigating Madam Mask, she discovers that Madam Mask has been selling LMD technologies, that's life model decoys for those who don't know, that are invested in extending the lifespans of the incredibly rich, until she is arrested by S.H.I.E.L.D. for breaking into Madam Mask's mansion. That's so hard to say, I'm so sorry. And trying to shut down her business. She learns that her father was one of her wealthy clients all along and had sicked S.H.I.E.L.D. on her in an effort to bring her back. And frustrated, she decides, why not leave L.A. behind? So she returns to New York City because she's a Marvel Comics character, where she teams back up with Clint and returns to help him with his tenants. Kate also appears in the Hawkeye versus Deadpool series that's running concurrent to the regular Hawkeye series, which is a little bit confusing. She first appears there after their original fight, where she discovers Deadpool and Clint sitting on the floor of Clint's apartment. She hits Deadpool over the head with a lamp, which I find deeply gratifying. The men reveal that although they were fighting, they had previously been attacked by a fake version of the Punisher, who was working as a part of a hacker group that had stolen personnel files from S.H.I.E.L.D., and they're trying to get them back. But because she's a lady, they often abandon her during the series. Left alone, Kate watches a video that the hacker made, and she's able to track down the location of his apartment and go there almost immediately because she had been working as a detective, kind of taking a Jessica Jones route. Her, Clint, and Deadpool then go undercover working with S.H.I.E.L.D. to recover the files. They're pretty quickly attacked by Typhoid Mary and Black Cat, and it is revealed that Black Cat is actually the person who is the head of this hacker organization. Deadpool then orders Kate to destroy a nearby electrical station so that Black Cat is unable to upload any of the information that she might have gotten her hands on. And in the end, they don't do an awesome job because Black Cat disguises herself as a police officer and literally just walks off the scene. So what I think is kind of frustrating about this series is that they fail in the end. And one of the things that I like about the Hawkeyes is even though they're unconventional vigilantes, they usually wind up successful.
Not usually. Hawkeye always fails.
But they always wind up helping the person who needs help.
Sure.
Often at their own expense. Like, at the end of the day, it's about, for them, it's supposed to be about helping people. Wind up doing that.
I guess I see Hawkeye as a character that fails half the time, especially in a solo series. So that's not surprising.
Just because he's naked?
No, that has nothing to do with it.
Following this, Kate and Clint work with S.H.I.E.L.D. again to infiltrate a Hydra base in Antarctica, where Maria Hill had informed them, quote, dangerous weapons were being held. These weapons are revealed to be horribly deformed children that make up something called Project Commune, and they have insane powers.
This is the Jeff Lemire series.
Yes, it is. This is the first arc of the Jeff Lemire series. It's a really great series that I think didn't get enough respect in the wake of the Fraction run.
Agreed.
After bringing them back to the helicarrier, Kate is consumed with an overwhelming sense of dread and convinces Clint to help her rescue the children from S.H.I.E.L.D. Working together, they steal a flying car, rescue the kids, and bring them back to Clint's apartment, where Hydra immediately tries to steal them back, which causes the children to unleash their powers and kill all of the agents. Clint convinces Kate that they've gone too far, that they can't control the kids, and they eventually do turn them back over to S.H.I.E.L.D. Although this agreement drives a pretty big wedge between Kate and Clint, while they remain partners, Kate can't really get over her anger and her feelings of betrayal at Clint. And I have to say, I don't know if they're wholly well placed, because I think this, I like that they're dealing with a complicated issue here.
Mm-hmm.
She begins operating behind his back, doing things like taking out Hammerhead, even though that was something that they had planned to do together, and starting to really define herself as a separate superhero, even though they share the same identity. When Clint confronted her about it, Kate admitted that she no longer wanted to be a part of Team Hawkeye and just wanted to be a vigilante on her own. Jason, do you think that breaking up Team Hawkeye was the right thing to do for Kate's character?
How do you mean?
Well, is it a, it is because she was a member of a team and then she was a member of a partnership. We don't get to see her operating on her own a lot successfully. Do you think that this was maybe an inevitability for her?
I mean,
she was going to break from Clint.
It's an inevitability of the way they've designed these two characters that they're always going to break up and then just get right back together again. And they're going to break up and then get right back together again. It's kind of, I hate to say it, even though there's only been two Hawkeye series that have dealt with these two characters, to me, it's almost become a trope of that series because Matt Fraction did it too, and then Jeff Lemire did it, and I think we're just going to do it every, I think every Hawkeye run is now going to have the time where Kate Bishop goes, I'm done with you, Clint. No, I'm not. No,
yeah.
I'm done with you, Clint. No, I'm not. It's become a trope of the series, I think. I would rather, that's what I was so excited with the Jeff Lemire run is, I would rather see them become quite successful together because I think that would eschew the trend.
Interesting. Very interesting. And the inevitability that Jason just described, Clint does make a very mature for Clint move and does apologize for Kate, admitting that he had been wrong about the Project Communion kids. They work with Barney Barton, who is Clint's brother, a.k.a. Trickshot, and they steal back the kids from S.H.I.E.L.D. while disguised as Hydra agents. They return them to Barney's house, which is on a secret island that no one else lives on, and he takes the kids in to live with him and his family. So again, kind of a happy ending, even though Clint and Kate are not in a happy place. They do make up, and Clint says that she can't be mad at him since she's his best friend, and Kate tells Clint that he is still and always will be her hero, which I think is really sweet. Later, when Kate is house-sitting for Clint, old man Logan breaks in looking for a place to rest. He has learned that he can't go back to his time, so he was trying to seek out Clint because they're such good friends where he comes from. Kate decides to help him out by taking on Mysterio because Logan has this idea that this whole thing isn't really real, that it's all an illusion that Mysterio has placed on him. He winds up acting really out of control. Every time they come across a male character that can't give him the answer he wants, Logan very, very viciously harms them. Kate confronts him about this behavior, and then Logan just decides that she's another part of Mysterio's plan and fights her. He slices her bow in half right after she shoots him, but luckily Captain America shows up to meet Logan slash hit him on the head with his vibranium shield and knock him out. Working with Cap, Kate brings old man Logan to Alberta, where he's confronted with 616 Logan's body that's frozen inside the adamantium, I guess S.H.I.E.L.D. we'll call it?
Bubble, I don't know what you, yeah.
Listen to Wolverine episode for more on that. Logan assumes that this is another one of Mysterio's illusions, and there's actually a really cool three-way fight here where he breaks another one of Kate's bows because he's a total jerk. Kate does appear in Civil War II at the funeral of James Rhodes, consoling America, who blames herself for not preventing the death of War Machine. And then Clint Barton winds up killing Bruce Banner, and Kate feels bad that she didn't know what Clint was going through and was unable to help him or to stop him. But she also feels frustrated that Clint keeps treating her like a child and refuses to share his bigger turmoil with her because she wants him to treat him as an equal, and he won't do that.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, she doesn't defend him publicly the way a lot of people had assumed that she would. But it does inspire her former teammates, Billy, Teddy, America, and David. David is the character Prodigy, for anyone who doesn't know. to show up and give a big show of support for her. And she appreciates learning that she isn't alone the way she had previously thought she was. Post-Civil War, she moves back to L.A. to set up Hawkeye Investigations, which is kind of a nod to Alias Investigations. And this inspires her to start a brand new team that's about to debut a new West Coast Avengers,
dun, 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 dun,
which is where we're going to end this lesson.
Cool.
Now, Jason, we've ended our lesson. Why don't you tell us a little bit about our second awesome sponsor that we have on this week's episode?
One of our sponsors for today's episode is ZipRecruiter. And ZipRecruiter happily sponsored this podcast because they want us to tell you that hiring used to be hard. There, you know, used to be multiple job sites, used to be stacks of resumes, all the paper. You had a confusing review process. How do I pick Jim over Sally and Sally over Jim? But I'm going to tell you, thanks to ZipRecruiter, hiring can be easy. And you only have to go to one place to get it done. That is ZipRecruiter.com/geekhistory. That's GeekHistory. But that should be pretty easy for you to type because it's the name of our podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you don't know what ZipRecruiter is, it's a great tool for businesses. It's a great tool for candidates because ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job brands. But they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology that I'm going to assume is partly based on Ultron, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through their site within the first day. And that's a good thing for businesses, and that's also a good thing for employees and people just looking for jobs. So with results like that, it's no wonder that ZipRecruiter is the highest rated hiring site in America. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address. If you're going to go try out ZipRecruiter, you need to go to this address, ZipRecruiter.com/geekhistory. That's ZipRecruiter.com/geekhistory. GeekHistory. That's where you go, because ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire, and they're also one of the smartest companies to have sponsored us. And we appreciate our sponsors because it helps keep our podcast free for you. So make sure you
check it out.
Check them out. Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah.
All right.
You know who uses ZipRecruiter?
Who?
Hawkeye. All right, let's move on.
That's how you get other Hawkeyes?
That's right.
All right, now it is time to talk about the recommended reading. Jason, what is that?
Recommended reading is where Professor Ashley is going to tell you about some books that you should read if you care about Kate Bishop. And if you want to read them, you should go over to geekhistorylesson.com/recommended reading. We have some widgets over on our site. We have every single book that we've ever talked about on this podcast. You click, 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 click on them. Go to Amazon. Purchase that book at Amazon, and a little piece of that purchase comes back to us, helps the Mayan University.
Heck yeah. Now, my first recommendation is the priciest, but I think it is the best Hawkeye story ever told. It is The Hawkeye by Matt Fraction and David Aja, Omnibus. It is this amazing standalone series that really cements Kate as a hero separate of a team. Yes, she's still working with Clint, but she's not just a support member of the Young Avengers here. You really get to see her come into her own, and you get to see how capable and incredible she really is. Then when you're done with that, I recommend picking up Hawkeye Volume 3 by Jeff Lemire. It's called Hawkeye Volume 3. It's the first volume of the Jeff Lemire
story. They call it Volume 3 because it follows the two volumes of Hawkeye by Matt Fraction.
Yes. This is where we see her and Clint start to get the wedge driven between them. They're working on Project Commune. And you get to see some vastly different art and storytelling tropes here than you saw previously.
I'm going to say it, and everybody's going to hate. I like that volume better than the Matt Fraction run.
That's a totally valid opinion to have. Kate does get a weird costume update where she has holes in her hips for this.
Yeah, it's a little
though.
Weird. Not that practical, but still.
And then I want to round it out by recommending Hawkeye Kate Bishop Volume 1 Anchor Points. This is Kate Bishop, Hawkeye's first solo series, written by Kelly Thompson. She's in LA. She's doing her investigative thing. It's a really, really cool story. It's amazing to see her come into her own for the first time. And recommending this leads us right into our discussion with the writer of this series, Kelly Thompson. She's been on this series before to talk about Gem. She rebooted that incredible comic book series. You know her from A-Force. You know her from Mr. and Mrs. X. And she's writing the new West Coast Avengers book coming to stores everywhere. Hi, Kelly. Thank you so much for joining us on Geek History Lesson.
Thanks for having me, Ashley.
One of our few returning guests, so it's very exciting.
I like that. I like how that sounds.
So since we're here talking about Kate Bishop this week, I want to ask a really, really obvious question. How did you get the job writing Hawkeye?
It was actually a sort of a really long, weird process to that where... Yeah, it was really the first thing I was trying to get my foot in the door with. I mean, I was doing other things as well, but I'd interviewed a few people and had built some sort of relationships at Marvel. I'd interviewed them mostly for my podcast that I used to run and also for a couple print interviews. And so I ended up with Janine Schaefer, who used to work there. I had been developing what I was calling Hawkeye Investigations because I didn't assume anyone was going to let me do a Kate Bishop book called Hawkeye. I'd been working on that for like a year off and on, and I finally got that in front of her. And then she eventually put it in front of, and I'm not actually sure the order of how it happened. I'm not sure if Sana saw the pitch before I ended up getting recommended to co-write with Kelly Sue DeConnick on Captain Marvel and the Carol Corps. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not sure which happened first. It's sort of a chicken or the egg thing. But in the process of working on that co-write and working with Sana, she brought up the Hawkeye pitch and she really liked it and maybe there was a space for it and let's talk about it more. But it was almost a year then after that before we really started talking about it. And in fact, one of the reasons it came up because I was working on A-Force and I was trying to develop a new arc for A-Force. And I thought, well, if this Hawkeye Investigations pitch isn't ever going to go through, maybe I should, you know, grab, steal from it and put this stuff in A-Force. And so I emailed Sana. I was like, hey, is that thing dead or what do we think? And she's like, actually, I was just going to email you this week. I want to get started on it. So took a long time, but really worth it. It was a real dream come true of a book for me.
Nice. And I'm so glad that you mentioned Sana because I think she's such a phenomenal editor and force at Marvel. And I know she's responsible for bringing a lot of really cool new female characters to the forefront. So just a quick shout out to her.
I love her. I mean, I think she is a really tremendous editor. I sort of have gone on and on about what I think of her in that regard. I really trust her. My boyfriend, whenever I'm complaining about edits or something, he's like, did you ask Sana? And I'm like, she doesn't edit this. I can't bother her with every little thing. But she's also just literally one of the greatest human beings, too, in addition. So she's incredible.
Nice. Now, let's get a little more into the Kate Bishop of it all. What do you think sets her apart from Clint Barton? Because when characters are legacy characters, it's really easy to paint them with the same brush that you paint their predecessor with.
Sure. That's interesting because I think on the surface, they're very different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they come from very different backgrounds. You know, Kate from sort of a very privileged life with, I mean, we've shown some of the problems in her family as well, but like a pretty stable environment in general, certainly compared to what Clint was, you know, how Clint was raised.
In a circus.
yeah, in a circus with a sort of abusive, broken family situation, you know. So, you know, obviously there one's a woman, one's a man. You know, they just really came to it very differently. So to me, it's like all the surface stuff is really different about them.
Mm-hmm.
And then what makes them interesting as Hawkeyes are the things that are sort of the same, which are sort of, I mean, the moxie you have to have in order to be like, oh yeah, I can stand next to Thor and fight supervillains, no problem. Like, you have to be something special inside to think that you can do that and then to do it, you know? So I think on the surface, their differences are really abundant, but it's like inside where they've got their similarities, which I really enjoy.
I think that's really sweet, actually. How did you hit on the idea of returning Kate to LA, or was that always part of your original Hawkeye Investigations pitch?
I think we were definitely, you know, obviously we were picking up on the matte fraction. Mm-hmm. It was Annie Wu who was mostly drawing the LA stuff for Kate. So we were picking up on that. And I think originally I had the pitch set in LA, but that was because, again, I had been developing it when Hawkeye was still coming out. So I was like, oh, well, we'll just keep her there. So then when she eventually came back to New York at the end of Hawkeye, I retooled the pitch to put her in New York. And it was when Sana and I started talking about it and developing it, she was like, no, I think we should take her back to LA. She's like, let's find a way to make that work, because it really helps set her apart from all these other characters that are in New York. And I totally agree. I also, as someone who lived in LA for a long time, I think the Los Angeles stories are really sort of underdeveloped there, which is a shame, because even though, I mean, you know, New York is obviously like an incredible setting, but you know, not everybody has to be there. Like, there, you can do some really fun things by taking superheroes out of that environment, I think.
You speaking about LA with such fervor makes me very excited to see what West Coast Avengers is going to be looking like.
Dude, I'm so excited about that book. It's one of those things where I get trouble. I have trouble sometimes judging where people are at, like what they're really excited about or what they're liking or what they're not liking. And I really have to step back from it, because it's pretty easy for me to get caught up in what I think people are going to think about something. And I caught myself the other day, because I'm so excited about how West Coast Avengers is turning out, of sort of assuming people are going to love it. And I was like, oh wait, that's a trap. I was like, don't do that, Kelly. You got to stop. But I'm just really happy with it. I mean, Stefano Caselli is an incredible artist, and he's one of those artists, like, you run into a lot of artists in comics who can really handle the action. Mm-hmm. And then you run into some who can really handle the comedy, but merging those two together so effortlessly is a real skill. And man, he's perfect for it. And Triona Ferrell's colors are just incredible. She does this like little like flush on Kate Bishop's face that like makes me want to faint. It's like such a, aww, it's such a subtle, it's just like a subtle thing that you wouldn't think matters, but it's just the kind of detail that really just makes something sing, you know?
I think too, sometimes people don't appreciate, and maybe don't know, just because of the way that the comics culture has been growing, how important a colorist can be and how much they can really add.
It's huge. It really can't be understated, and it's a real weird shame that they get undersold in that way. I mean, letterers too.
Absolutely.
You know, it takes a village to make a great comic, and it's one of the it's so important. And I've been really fortunate for the most part that I've had really great teams, and you know, Hawkeye was definitely an example of sort of a perfect team. I mean, that book, even though we were in development for a long time, that book was really easy to do. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like it was easy. It's always hard, but it really, the team was working in really great sync. And I feel like I'll sort of always be chasing that experience of everyone being just like really in sync. But I've had a couple experiences that are coming really close, and West Coast Avengers is definitely one of them, where everyone's like really excited and it's turning out really beautifully.
I know when the announcement was made, because we have a longstanding joke about the West Coast Avengers on this podcast, that I got about 150 tweets sharing the announcement.
Oh, wow.
So I think a lot of people are really excited. And if nothing else, a lot of people listening to this podcast are really excited.
Well, that's good. That's good. I mean, you know, your own Twitter can obviously be a sort of an echo chamber of approval or disapproval, I suppose, but usually the people in my Twitter are, you know, really supportive and really wonderful. Mm-hmm. And the response to it was incredible. I know there are critics and complainers too, but you know, that always happens with these things. And certainly when you're sort of, I don't want to say rebooting, but bringing back a property that's sort of lain fallow for a long time, you know, there are people who are really attached to, you know, the old version of that. But I mean, it's been 20 plus years since we've had a West Coast Avengers book. And it's, you know, I understand people want to just see that all over again, but mm-hmm. I think this is a little more interesting to try it with some new characters. And, you know, the good news is it doesn't do anything to harm all those old books that we love. So
what a concept.
We'll see. We're having a lot of fun. I know that.
Nice. You kind of alluded to this a little earlier, and I wanted to circle back. And if with your pitch always having been a Hawkeye investigations kind of thing, can you talk about striking the balance between Kate as an investigator and Kate as a superhero, especially with West Coast Avengers, which I'm assuming is going to lean a little more superhero?
Yeah, it's definitely going to lean more superhero. I mean, you know, I think the funny thing is one of the great surprises of West Coast Avengers sort of turning out so great. Like, I just proofed the final proof last week and I was like, man, I love this book. And I was like, why am I surprised by that? And it was because the growing pains on this one were pretty tough. Mm-hmm. We were on a pretty tight timeline because Hawkeye was ending and they really wanted to promote that she was going to be back. And like, so they really wanted it in the pipeline, but I was really struggling with it. And it was only in retrospect that I figured out what the problem was. Well, or toward the end of cracking it and figuring out how to make it work. I was struggling with it because I loved Hawkeye, our book, so much. And part of me just wanted to keep doing that. And so there had to be, for me, a sort of come to Jesus moment where I realized, like, this has to become its own thing. Like, I have to let go of Hawkeye investigations and Kate Bishop Hawkeye and let her and this team evolve to a thing. And it was sort of the stop trying to do what that book was and let this be Kate having adventures that we never could have tackled in Hawkeye, right? Mm. Like, what's that? What does that look like? Like, instead of keeping to try to hold on so tightly to the spirit of this thing you loved, in her world, what are the kind of things we never could have done? Now we can do those. So what do those look like? And so that was when I sort of cracked how West Coast Avengers should look, how it should feel, what it should be. And it was a really eye-opening, wonderful moment. As a creator, you sort of love those moments that you try to hang on to them in your mind for when it doesn't work later. But yeah, so we'll see a little bit of her detective stuff, both in how she approaches things. And like, I think I've written in the first three issues, I think I've written one example of her using her Hawkeye vision that we love so much in the other series. Mm-hmm. But again, it's we as an audience have to evolve just as she does. Right. And so I just want us to sort of roll with it and see how she does as a leader, see how she does with sort of much larger threats and higher stakes and also a lot more interpersonal drama going on with this team that sort of loves each other and hates each other.
So you heard confirmation here. We have at least three scripts in the can going
yeah.
forward.
Oh,
on
yeah.
West Coast
oh, yeah.
Avengers.
if Alana had her way, I would have turned in four on Friday. So yeah, we're close. We're close on having four in.
Nice. So my final question is, you've written a lot of iconic female characters on A-Force alone. So many people know you for giving new life to the Gem franchise. When you were piecing together what your version of Kate was going to be, did you pull inspiration from any of these characters that you'd written in the past?
I think, you know, all these characters have to find their own voice, and some part of that voice is me in there, right? So certainly, it wasn't.
Is she you?
No, I wish I was Kate Bishop. I mean, maybe not so bruised, but other than that, yeah. So, you know, there's always a little bit of that, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I think with Kate, I'm more pulled from things that had already been done with her, especially Fraction, Aja Wu's Hawkeye, plus sort of other influences for the direction I was trying to take her, which was sort of a Veronica Mars-ish kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it was more like that. I mean, you know, she's got a little, I feel like Kate's got a little dash of a lot of different things in her, which makes her interesting. You know, she's got a little bit of Jessica Jones in her, but she's way lighter than that. She's got a little bit of Clint Barton in that in her, but she's sort of more together than that, at least for her age.
Yeah.
You know, one of my favorite things and that Matt Fraction and his team did, and this is not anything I've had a conversation with him or anyone about, so it's just my opinion. But when I look at that run, which are some of my favorite comics of all time, I see two very different Kates. And there's the Kate in New York that's drawn by David Aja, who's incredibly capable and giving Clint a hard time. And she's sort of perfect, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got sort of falling down, can't make it work, Kate, in LA. And my take on that is the New York Kate is sort of Kate through Clint's eyes. And
oh, that's so interesting.
Kate in LA with Annie Wu is Kate through her own eyes. Like, that's when it's becoming her own book. And so while I love them both, I love both versions of that Kate, I think it's a really interesting comment on perception. And so I think that when we did Hawkeye, it's Kate's book. So you're getting a lot more of the Annie Wu, Matt Fraction Kate, because she's not being seen through anyone's eyes anymore. She's, you know, her own person. And then I think Kate in West Coast Avengers is a little bit of both. Clint's there. And so it naturally changes like who and how she is. But she's really coming into her own. And so some of that is still holdover stuff from Hawkeye.
Nice. Well, Kelly, thank you so, so much for coming back and chatting to us and educating us again on this history lesson a couple years later. And can you let our listeners know, aside from picking up your Hawkeye trade or rushing out in a buying frenzy when West Coast Avengers hits, where they can find you, where they can support you all over the world?
Thanks. Yeah, they can find me on Twitter. It's at 79 semifinalist. And basically everywhere else, it's 1979 semifinalist. Damn Twitter and that character count. And yeah, they've got Jessica Jones is in digital stores now. West Coast Avengers will be out next month, the 22nd, I believe, of August. And Mr. and Mrs. X is out now, too.
Oh, what an incredible, incredible chat with Kelly. We're so lucky to have her agree to come on again.
I think now all we have to do is hashtag her West Coast Avengers dun dun dun. Let's get that in the comic book, everybody.
Got to get working on that.
Let's do it. Tweet Kelly Thompson. By the way, tweet Kelly Thompson and tell her how much you enjoyed her on the show. Just let's blow up her Twitter. When you hear this episode, go tag her on Twitter. She said her Twitter in the discussion.
At 79 semifinalist.
At 79 semifinalist. And tell her how much you enjoyed her being on the podcast, because we really appreciated her taking her busy time out of the West Coast Avengers and, you know, coming to talk about West Coast Avengers.
And I do want to say that if you enjoyed listening to her, we do have a full Secret Origin of Kelly Thompson in comics discussion coming to our Patreon at patreon.com/Jawin in our Geek History Lesson Extra segment. So
wait. Hold on a second. You're telling me that you have like 10 more minutes with Kelly Thompson, but
I think we're closer to 17 more minutes.
17 more minutes of Kelly Thompson telling you how she got into comic books
and laying down some great advice about how you can break into comic books.
That's
too.
Great. That's good stuff.
I actually wrote some notes.
Patreon.com/Jawin. That's awesome.
Yeah. And then also you're supporting us. So it's a win for you and a win for the Mind University.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Why don't we roll into the teaching tweet?
Teaching tweet is Professor Ashley is going to tell you, you know, she's going to tweet out about Kate Bishop in about 140 characters or less.
Yes. And you can find this at GHL Podcast. Kate Bishop, the very best Hawkeye girl that Clint doesn't deserve, we don't deserve, but definitely deserves a shot at the big screen. Hashtag West Coast Avengers. Dun, dun, dun.
A lot of deserves.
Yeah, I was going for a little little theme there.
I see.
I don't see. I don't know if Kate Bishop has gotten everything that she deserves, but I really think she's a wonderful
character. I mean, she
is
a rich lady. How much more does she deserve?
She deserves a fabulous solo series. She deserves to be Hawkeye on the big screen. She deserves to have a man treat her right, or a woman, who cares?
All right, cool.
Do we have any honor roll for this episode?
We have two people joining the honor roll, the Geek History Lesson honor roll this week, and you can do that by going to iTunes/Apple Podcast and leaving us a 5-star review. It doesn't matter what you write, but whatever you write is going to help us in the iTunes algorithm. First person joining the honor roll is Fumblefoot.
Nice.
Who said, I'm a very new comic reader. I'm 21 and just started right before DC Rebirth. Listening to this podcast, I always get to hear about books I probably wouldn't have found on my own, and I'm learning about so many new characters. I would love to hear a discussion episode about the DC New 52, because I'm sure there are other new readers slash listeners like myself who don't know anything other than the New 52 and love to hear your opinions on why it's so unpopular. Thanks so much to Jason and Ashley for their fun and quirky lessons. I can't wait to hear what you guys do next.
Ooh, thank you.
So welcome, Fumblefoot, to the honor roll. And the next person is Green Lantern 89441, who says, this podcast allows me to catch up on all the history I don't have time to read. I would listen to anything these two talk about. Thanks for the nerd knowledge.
Aww.
So Green Lantern 89441 and Fumblefoot, welcome to the GHL Honor Roll. See some gold stars next to your name. And welcome to the Teacher's Lounge. You're going to get a key.
A key.
Yep. So go over there, subscribe to us on iTunes, subscribe to us on Spotify, subscribe to us, you know, at the newsstand. If you're at the newsstand, go up to your newsstand, guys. Say like, hey, Geek History Lesson, where's it at? And he'll be like, that's a podcast, you idiot. And you're like, I don't care. Give it to me. Wherever you can subscribe, go do that. Also, don't forget to suggest future lessons. Ashley, where can they suggest future topics for Geek History Lesson?
Oh, you can do that on geekhistorylesson.com, facebook.com/geekhistorylesson, or on Twitter at GHL Podcast.
That's right. And don't forget to follow us all on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter at Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N. Follow Ashley on Twitter at Ashley V. Robinson and the podcast at GHL Podcast. And then head on over to patreon.com/Jawin. And go listen to a little bit more Kelly Thompson. I'm going to listen to that right after I stop this recording.
Heck yeah, she was such a gem.
Ashley, what do we got for hashtag stick around? The very last thing where we trick people into listening to all our plugs.
Jason, who's the best Hawkeye?
I mean, it's obvious who the last Hawkeye is. Natty Bumpo from Last of the Mohicans is the best Hawkeye of all time.
Yeah?
Better than Alan especially Alden? When portrayed by Daniel Day-Lewis in the movie Last of the Mohicans. Mm. The pathos and the journey and the character arc of said character is much more compelling than any other Hawkeye in history. If I was to give a second place to the best Hawkeye ever, I think I would have to go to Mr. Alan Alda.
Mm.
Mr. Hawkeye, is it Benjamin Pierce?
Benjamin Franklin Hawkeye Pierce.
Benjamin Franklin Pierce. Doctor whose wit and saccharism and all the other made up words help you survive the Korean War.
Cool. Good answer.
Who's your favorite Hawkeye? I know what you're going to say.
I think Kate's probably my favorite Hawkeye.
Yeah.
She's really cool.
Clint Barton's the best Hawkeye because he's Hawkeye. That's who he is.
What's your favorite Hawkeye costume? Do you like the classic West Coast Avengers Clint look?
It's hard to beat that costume.
Mm-hmm.
And when a good artist draws it, it doesn't look dated.
Interesting.
Like some of those costumes. I'm not a huge fan of the just t-shirt triangle. I think it's kind of a lazy design. Although it looks cool for the modern day. I'd be honest with you.
I think they did it for cosplayers, I'm going to be honest.
I agree. I honestly think that they should do something that's a mix of the two.
Mm-hmm.
That's a mix of... That's really a mix of the old school costume with the Wolverine cowl and the t-shirt.
Because I think the movie costume is really lame.
Which one? He's worn
all of them.
He's worn
all
a different. Yeah, he's worn a different costume in every movie.
I don't know why they're insistent on making his highlights maroon instead of purple. I don't know if they think purple is like unmasculine.
They did that because Ultimate Hawkeye's highlights are maroon.
Okay, that's fair.
And Avengers 1 is completely based
right.
on the Ultimates.
You're right, but I think all the purple costumes are better.
100%
personally.
I actually think Kay has a better Hawkeye costume than Clint.
The original one where her belly's out?
No, I like the one where that has the weird holes in her hips.
I do too. I just wish I don't even mind that there's circles there. I just wish they were filled in. Like, I don't know why you would want your hip bones.
Especially when you have a belt.
Sticking out. And then if your costume, I always assume that superhero costumes are tight.
Yeah.
So you're just like spilling out and it's going to be unflattering.
Yep.
It's kind of like the Catwoman costume with the cold shoulders.
Oh, the current one.
I don't understand
the
necessity of that.
Yeah, it's weird.
I like that though, and there's a cool action figure of her with that costume, but it comes in a 3-pack.
Who are you, Hawkeye?
Of Kate.
Oh, with the hips out costume?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And I want it, but I don't want the other two action figures in the pack.
Oh, man. So, those poor action figures are going to go to the island of misfit toys.
I've been, if anyone has an extra one, please send it to me at our PO
box. It's Marvel Legends.
Or I'm trying to buy one loose on eBay and I've had no luck.
Oh really?
Yeah.
How much they
the 3-pack is $60.
Well, nobody has it separate?
I haven't seen it loose anywhere.
Oh Jesus.
I check about every couple months.
Oh man.
Because right. I think most of the people bought it for her.
For Kate.
I'm gonna be honest.
Well, because it comes with Cap, Falc, and then Vision's Marvel, yeah. all different new.
And I have
Vision costume.
I actually think the Falcon costume is pretty cool.
Yeah, the Cap Falcon costume is pretty cool.
I have a Vision, a better Vision from a previous Marvel Legends set. Yeah. And I'm like, $60. Like, I get it. You would buy them each for $24.99. It's probably a deal, but it's hard for me to drop $60 on a bunch of action figures all in one go.
I get it.
Even though I did it at Comic-Con. Don't judge me.
All right, that's it. Thank you so much for listening to Geek History Lesson. I am Jason Arrowhead Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson.
And Professor Ashley, line up your shot, pull back your bow, feel the weight of the arrow, and close out this podcast with a bullseye.
Class is now dismissed.